from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. You open Instagram, and there's your stylish friend posing with a name brand mascara, sweater, or flavored water. No Kylie Jenner, your friend has maybe 1,200 followers. So what's she doing promoting products like a celebrity? Welcome to the world of nano-influencers, the latest trend in social media advertising. In exchange for free stuff or small sums of cash, brands are using normal people, your friends, family, and colleagues, to sell their wares. And it is working. This hour on Point, the nano-influencers. And who can you really trust online? Join us. Are you a nano-influencer? Is your social media feed pushing products endorsed by your friends and family? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. With me from New York is Sapna Maheshwari, business and advertising reporter for The New York Times. She's been writing about this trend, and you can find a link to her story. Are you ready for the nano-influencers? That's at our website, onpointradio.org. Sapna, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So give us a working definition. What is what is influence marketing in the first place?
Influence marketing is probably best known for those posts you see on YouTube and Instagram from people with lots and lots of social media followers. And they're promoting, well, you name it, toys, sometimes even pharma products, lots and lots of beauty products and fashion brands. And you might see a hashtag sponsored or hashtag ad.
Or you might not.
Or you might not.
Mm-hmm. So there are influencers and there are so-called micro-influencers and then there are nano-influencers. What's the difference here?
Yeah, so this market, as it's gotten more and more popular, has gotten smaller. So influencers, you can probably even name a few. Those are the people with often millions of followers or in the high hundreds of thousands of followers. And micro-influencers are people maybe with in the tens of thousands of followers. And then you keep traveling down to nano-influencers, and that's people with as little as 1,000 Instagram followers.
And why are they effective? Why are the nano-influencers effective? I can understand why the influencers are with millions of followers, but why are these nano-influencers making such a difference?
So nano-influencers are about as close as you can get to your friend telling you that they love Cheetos or some other product. It's unexpected. It harnesses that word of mouth that marketers are always looking for. And it's just showing up in your feed. It doesn't feel like as much of an ad as maybe someone who you know is getting paid to promote a shampoo or something.
So these are just ordinary people, your sister or your cousin, sending out product endorsements for makeup or clothing or plants or books or whatever, just to their feed.
Exactly.
So how do we know? Do we know how big this market is, the nano influencer market? How many people are out there doing it?
Well, that's the thing about influencer marketing. The entire market is incredibly opaque. If you search the word hashtag ad or hashtag sponsored on Instagram, you're getting millions of results. And so no one quite knows how big it is. But, you know, anecdotally, you're seeing people from all around the country who are saying, hey, oh, I know a friend who suddenly is, you know, posting some sponsored stuff on their feed. Or you have all these young people who are suddenly trying to actually get into this market.
Mm. So which platforms are most popular with nano-influencers?
I would say Instagram and YouTube are the biggest for influence marketing overall. And for our story, we focused very much on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. And the demographics of this, are these mostly women? What are you seeing?
Definitely a lot of young women in their 20s, 30s, even high schoolers, actually. And part of that is because it's very easy to promote beauty products, clothing, all of those kinds of items. And a lot of women, of course, are scrolling through Instagram and seeing a lot of this stuff. And, you know, it's making an impression.
And what does the nano influencer get out of the deal to push these products on their social media feed?
And they're getting free products.
Give us an example of that.
Sure. So they could be getting, say, a case of coffee or a bunch of free creams, and they're willing in exchange for receiving that product to post about it just the way the brand wants. The brand will give them talking points. You know, we're trying to illuminate this moisturizing effect of our shampoo, or we're trying to make this line up with the launch of a new product. And often the nano influencers will even get approval from the brand before they go and post it, and they find it a fair trade.
So no money exchanging here necessarily, but free products, a free box of moisturizer or whatever the case may be.
Exactly. And that's a big part of why it's lucrative for advertisers, because as influencer marketing has become so much more of an industry online, there's a lot of people who are charging a lot of money for a single post who maybe even only have 30,000 followers. Hmm. And so the opportunity with the nano influencers is you can kind of buy them for cheap.
Let's talk to a nano influencer now from Columbus, Ohio, Kelsey Rosenberg. Kelsey, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So tell me, how did you get into nano influencing?
So I started posting kind of on Instagram and started being asked by different brands if I would post for them. So it's kind of they're reaching out to me and then partnering with a couple different companies that combine influencers and smaller brands, like the company, obviously.
So they reach out to you. How did they find you? How did these companies find you?
So they find you through different platforms. So they'll kind of either search for a certain look or kind of a certain hashtag and find you through that.
And how many followers do you have?
Right under 2,000.
So not that many. Okay, what sorts of products do you promote?
So a lot of skincare, clothing, any kinds of like health food, things like that.
And how do you let your followers know that these products are sponsored, or do you? Are they just part of your feed, part of what you're sending out in addition to, you know, pictures of your kids or the new puppy or whatever the case may be?
Right. So a lot of times I'll follow whatever the brand wants from the ad. So if they would like you to post a hashtag ad or a hashtag sponsored, then I'll follow that. If they don't, then I'll just kind of follow whatever guidelines they put out for you.
So the brand tells you what it wants. Do they give you language that you use in your social media feed? I mean, how specific do they get?
A lot of times they will give you specific verbiage that they want said, whether or not that a product would be a great gift or that a product is cruelty-free or a product is made in the U.S., kind of whatever points they're trying to make and whatever they're trying to promote currently with their line.
Are you ever compensated?
Mostly it's just a product for post kind of arrangement.
Which means what?
So they'll send kind of free product in exchange for you posting a certain amount of times on your Instagram or on your story.
And so I'm just curious, how do the people in your life react? Your family and friends that are on your Instagram feed, what are they saying to you about this? Do they even know?
Yeah, a lot of people kind of reach out and just ask if, you know, something is promoted, and I'm very transparent with that, if something has been sent to me or if it is something that I've bought for myself, and kind of telling them just what I think, honestly, of the product. I think that the best part about kind of the smaller nano influencer market is I don't have a huge obligation to not be truthful. So if something doesn't work for me, I'm honest with the company and I'm honest with my followers. And I think that a lot of my friends and family know that. I have had a couple, you know, guy friends who aren't as aren't as excited to see posts about skincare and posts about fashion. But most of my girlfriends and family really like the posts and encourage it.
And no one ever says, why are you selling me stuff? That's not what I signed up for your post for.
No, and, you know, the best part about Instagram is if they don't like the post or don't enjoy the content, it's very easy to unfollow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they can stay in touch with me in other ways.
So do you see this as a hobby, Kelsey, a future career? Is this sort of a side hustle for you?
Yeah, definitely kind of a hobby, just something on the side. I do have kind of a normal 9-to-5 job, but I enjoy doing this and trying out new products and being kind of on that scene. Columbus is also a great place for it. There's so many small entrepreneurs and a lot of people with smaller businesses, so it's awesome to kind of connect with them as well.
Well, Kelsey Rosenberg from Columbus, Ohio, she's a nano influencer. Talk to us about it today. Kelsey, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having
me. Thank you. Sapna Maharishi, what do you hear in this conversation? What do you hear in people like Kelsey? What are the ethics of all this?
So the ethics, well, we've known for a long time that disclosure can be a little fuzzy in the influencer marketing space. And, you know, that's part of what makes it appealing for brands. They want an endorsement to look, you know, just as authentic as possible. the ethics for the people posting, I mean, I think they're seeing it as kind of a fun, cool thing to do. You could kind of hear that from Kelsey. It's exciting and a hobby, actually, to advertise now, which I don't know if we've really seen that in the past.
Has the Federal Trade Commission weighed in on all this? I mean, there's some talk about rules governing the disclosure of these endorsements on social media, paid or otherwise. What do you know about that?
Absolutely. So the FTC actually has very specific guidelines. Really, if you receive anything of value from a company, you have to disclose it and put that it was a gift and put hashtag ad, hashtag sponsored in your post. But we've seen compliance with that very hit or miss. Even the Kardashians came under fire just a couple years ago for failing to put that kind of disclosure on their posts. And these are women, you know, with millions of followers. So it stands to reason that you see sort of shaky compliance mm-hmm. because a lot of people know they can get away with it.
Since your story was published in the Times, you've been flooded with emails, I understand. What are you hearing, Sepna?
Oh, I've got so many emails from people saying, we're doing this too. Lots of firms saying that nano influencers are the way to go. This is our strategy. And a lot of people actually consider what they're doing less influencer marketing and more getting authentic reviews, even though they're, you know, giving the product for free to people and sometimes giving these guidelines on what to say. And so there's a little bit of a gray line, I think, there as well.
Well, we've got more to talk about on this. Coming up after the break, we'll hear from a marketing firm that connects social media influencers and advertisers. That's coming up next. Sepna Maheshwari, stick with me. We're discussing the latest social media marketing trend, and that is companies paying your friends, your coworkers, your family members to promote their products. You can join the conversation. Are you more persuaded to buy when you know the endorser? I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and we're talking about nano influencers this hour, the latest social media advertising trend using everyday people to pitch and to sell products. You can join the conversation. When you buy a lipstick, do you want to look more like a celebrity or your sister? Whose endorsement do you most trust? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. Here's a nano influencer named Alexis Baker opening a box of free beauty products from Purelease this summer. She documented the moment in an Instagram story for her nearly 3,000 followers to see.
Oh my God, Purelease, you guys totally spoiled me. I was not expecting this. They just sent me pretty much all of their best-selling items. Super excited about this. I think I'm most excited about the coconut and coffee sugar body scrub. I'm all for a good exfoliant. Sheet masks, you know, I love my sheet masks. And then I'm really interested to try the tinted moist cream.
I've been speaking this hour with Sepna Maheshwari. She's a business and advertising reporter for The New York Times. Joining me now from New York is May Karwowski, founder and CEO of Obviously, a marketing firm that connects social media influencers and advertisers. May, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Hi, Jane. Thanks so much.
So how does your agency utilize so-called nano influencers?
So we really pair nano influencers with brands. And we have a technology platform that makes it possible for us to work with thousands of nano influencers at a time for a brand and also make sure that these nano influencers have a really great time while they're doing it.
So what does that exactly mean? What does your clientele look like?
So we have clients who are, you know, small startups to Fortune 50 companies. Some of the largest companies in the world work with us. And then, you know, we have my friend's fitness studio on the Upper East Side, and she mm-hmm. works with us, too.
And so how do you decide which nano influencers to go after, which ones to target, to pinpoint?
So yeah, you know, that's actually a really big part of what we do at Obviously. We are analyzing the audiences of these nano influencers to see, you know, are most of their followers women? Do most of their followers live in the U.S. and in New York, to be specific? When one of these nano influencers posts, what percentage of their followers are liking and commenting? And then you can actually see in the comments, you know, are a lot of these comments in depth? You know, is the sentiment positive? Are there a lot of emojis? So we're really making sure that we're finding the right nano influencers for the right brand.
And so does that mean you have teams trolling social media feeds? I mean, how do you physically, you know, practically speaking, go about that?
Well, this is just a really big public data set. And when you think of it that way, you know, you have millions and hundreds of millions of users on Instagram, and the platform has been around for a decade now. So all these people are really documenting their lives and posting things daily. So we're really pairing people who are excited to document and share things with their friends and their followers and brands who potentially want to work with them.
Mm. I'm curious, do certain types of products and brands work better with this kind of promotion, with the nano influencer promotion, than others?
Yeah, so it's really interesting because, you know, it's kind of like you and I both have friends who are really good at fishing or who are really good at crocheting or who always have really good recommendations for where to go in Paris because they seem to always be there when you open Instagram. So we really are finding the people who are influential in the right sphere and pairing those people with brands who want to reach people in that sphere.
Hmm. Got so many calls here. A lot of listeners want to get in here. Christina is first. Let's go to Baltimore, Maryland. Hi, Christina. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks so much.
You bet. Go ahead.
So I've seen a lot of things on social media that I pretty much automatically assumed were multi-level marketing. I really hadn't heard of nano-influencing.
Mm-hmm.
So when I see things like, hey, girl, have you heard about this new product? Is there a way to kind of tell the difference between people who are in multi-level marketing versus doing this sort of nano-influencing?
Mm, good question, Christina. Thank you. What do you say, May?
Yeah, so, you know, I think to Sapta's point earlier, this is influencer marketing is now a multi-billion dollar industry, and it is extremely opaque. You know, when we talk to some of our brand clients, they're like, it's the Wild West out there. We don't really know how to approach this. So Obviously is really kind of the adult in the room with real technology and real strategies and real measurement to know, hey, you should work with this person. You should not work with this person. You should make sure that these people are disclosing on social media what they're doing and making sure, too, that it is really authentic and that none of the influencers are actually working with a brand if they don't 100% actually really like that product, that juice, that moisturizer. Like, there's no real reason to work with them because, you know, hey, that's.
But how can it really be authentic if you're sending this person free product? They're getting a box of your, you know, mascara or their flavored water or whatever it is. How can it really be authentic? They're getting something out of this. This is not, you know, truly motivated from their own use, right?
Well, actually, like I would look at it from a very different point of view. You know, before I started the company, one of my first jobs out of college was to be a social media manager, and I worked on the Real Housewives Facebook page. And I was just so impressed by how many people were responding and were so excited when the brand actually responded back to them. Like, these aren't just people who want to be influencers. These are super fans who are really excited when they get something free from a brand and they get to communicate directly to a brand. It's more about access to a brand rather than, you know, only Jennifer Lawrence can be the one to tell me what fragrance I should buy.
Let's go to Patrick in Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Patrick, you're on the air.
Hi, how's it going?
Well, go ahead.
I just think this is such a fascinating conversation. I'm a photographer who, as Instagram has really exploded in the last like 10 years or so, has become an influencer. So I've worked with a variety of different companies, but I think I have higher standards than some. Like, I don't do a whole lot of like trade for product just because I was already a working photographer.
So do you have companies reaching out to you, Patrick?
Correct. Yeah. So even just this last year, I worked with a board of tourism for one state, and I worked with a car company, and I've worked with like products that are camera based. And it's all been really fun, good work, but it is really interesting the effect that it has on the photography market as far as, like, these are big companies that normally are spending millions and millions of dollars in advertising, and this is a great incentive for them to just give away product instead of and be able to cut back on those marketing and advertising budgets.
And what do you see as, what is the impact, Patrick? What have you seen as the difference based on what you're sending out there?
Well, I would say it definitely makes photography as a career much less sustainable for people. It's totally more and more of a young man's game, in my opinion. Sorry, young man or a woman's game, because it's just a very big hustle, and the money is not like it was from the 70s to the early 2000s.
Patrick, thank you. May, let me get back to you. I mean, what is the impact you see in this kind of nano influencer market? How do you track whether your placement is successful?
So we track based on sales, on, you know, if a product is being promoted in the Midwest, you know, does the company see a lift in sales there? Or also, you know, is engagement really high on this person's photo? And are people now like, hey, I never knew about that moisturizer. This actually looks really, really interesting. Mm.
Let's get Camilla in here from Liberty Lake, Washington. Hi, Camilla. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
So I see multiple layers of problems with this. For starters, we have a culture that overconsumes. We have a culture that conflates pleasure with contentment. And we go out and purchase something, we get this little dopamine hit, it feels good, it's short term, and too much pleasure, like we have all seen with the opioid crisis, causes addiction and like makes us less happy. And we are not, compared to other countries, a very happy country. And right before your program came on, there was a story about decreased life expectancy because of suicide rates going up.
But do you link that? I mean, Sapna, jump back in here. I mean, is it harmful, you know, if your friend's pitching out, you know, mascara or, you know, a favorite new brand that they just tried and, you know, they want their sister to know about it. Is it that big of a deal, Sapna? How do you see this?
Oh, well, I probably wouldn't compare it to the opioid crisis, but I think the one concern that I have heard from people about this kind of behavior is just that it reflects a growing disconnect between reality and the real lives that we live and the lives that we post about on Instagram and social media. And I think there's different points of view on that, but there is a sense that Instagram is often, you know, not showing reality. It's we become different people online. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's one of the sort of issues that's come up as I've talked to people about this.
May, do you negotiate with your nano influencers? Do you ever talk with them about, you know, the creative direction of the ad or the language that is used? Kelsey Rosenberg in Columbus said, yeah, sometimes that happens. Do you think that that's ethical? Is that something, you know, that should be done here?
So a big thing that we do is it's really important for us that it is authentic. And so we'll give what we call a creative brief, which is basically a few bullet points of like, you know, here are a few ideas. We never approve the content beforehand, especially with nano influencers, if there's no payment and no contract in place. So it's really about, you know, we're going to give you this product. If you don't want it, if you don't like it, definitely do not work with them. If you're excited and you think this brand's really cool and you do want to be working with them over the long term, we'll help make that happen. But it really needs to be authentic and look good in their feed and be something that they're actually proud of. Because, yeah, there is a lot of, you know, bad influencer marketing out there, and we really don't want to be associated with that.
Let's get Kathy in here from Miami, Florida. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm a very petite woman and always struggled finding clothes to fit. So I was overjoyed when I discovered a couple of petite bloggers that were more or less my size. And I started to follow them and really appreciated their input and things that worked for them and things that didn't. But what I have noticed is as they do posts that are actually sponsored by companies, that I don't feel they're as honest in these posts, and I've noticed that actually products I've bought from posts that have been sponsored really haven't worked out as well for me because I don't feel they've given really the most honest input when they're being sponsored.
So there's an element of trust here, Kathy, for you. So after you've experienced this, do you let that person go? Do you you don't turn to them for advice anymore? I mean, what's been your response to these?
I do still follow them. I've just realized that when it is a post they're doing that is sponsored, that maybe it's a little more pushing the product than honesty. And I have noticed that that there are more and more posts that are sponsored. And I understand these ladies have to make a living, too, that they do make a living from this.
That's interesting. Do you worry about that, May, that sort of response from consumers, from customers?
Yes. I think there are two things here, actually, because one, I think that this one woman talking about, you know, that she's petite and it was hard for her to find really good recommendations. You know, a lot of what we're doing is about inclusivity and working with, you know, nano influencers who are just like you and I, because they actually are you and I, you know, they come in all different shapes, sizes, ethnicities, and have really different passions and interests. And so that is actually, you know, a really good thing that we haven't seen a lot of from mainstream media and billboard and TV advertising, where everyone is a model who looks similar. So on that point, like, I think that's really positive. You know, and to the second point where she wasn't, you know, she didn't like the sponsored content as much, I think that is really important that we're measuring, measuring how well these influencers' sponsored posts do. Because, yeah, a brand shouldn't be working with someone if it looks really, you know, it doesn't ring true because it isn't authentic, because it isn't a good post, and she doesn't actually like the brand she's talking about. So
appreciate the call. Thank you. Let's go to Sam, who's in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Sam. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I work in a different sector of the marketing agency, so I've had a unique look at when I go to big conferences and stuff. I see this, you know, all the experts on influencer marketing and all the sessions and workshops that go on, and it's just become a massive thing in such a small amount of time. I'm just wondering if your guest has any insight into or intuition about the sustainability of this. And as a user of Instagram and platforms like this, I see that, you know, very quickly my feeds have sort of become just taken over by marketers. And I'm wondering if there's a point at which the authenticity factor kind of gets blown away by the fact that everything you're seeing on Instagram is basically an ad. And and also, if you could speak to perhaps the cynicism that I see that crawls into the comments of influencer posts, whether it's on YouTube or Instagram, there seems to be kind of like a meta awareness.
Like, what do you mean? Give me an example of that, Sam, quickly.
I'll see on like very obvious or not even obvious ads, but people like marketers giving advice about how the ad could be better, or people tagging the other friends and saying things about, check out this lame ad. I'm wondering if there's any like bad or negative effects that brands see from cynical posts or backlash.
Got it. Sam, thank you. Great question. May, what do you say to that, to the cynicism piece? And will this change the way we respond to advertising in the future, especially online, on social media?
Yeah, but I mean, as this industry has exploded, there's definitely some bad influencer marketing out there. And that's frankly why people hire, obviously. It's like we're making sure that they're doing it in the right way, that actually, you know, it's like a really good recommendation, and it's just a friend telling another friend about something that they like because they really are a super fan. You know, I have actually a woman on my team is a nano influencer, and she loves Glossier, and she actually dressed up as a Glossier product for Halloween, and then the brand responded and she thought it was really cool. So I think that there is really a part of this where it's just a group of super fans who are really excited to now have access and actually be able to talk to the brand directly, which is, yeah.
Yeah, Sapna, how would you answer Sam's question about how this might change the way we respond to advertising more broadly or just in social media in the future?
It's an interesting point. I mean, I think part of why nano influencers have emerged is because a lot of brands have been moving from the biggest people where you might expect to see sponsored content down to people with, you know, 30,000, 40,000 followers. And then, you know, people become the consumers become desensitized to that. And then they moved even further to nano-influencers, where they're promoting posts there. So clearly there is a, we're reaching more and more levels where people are becoming aware of this and perhaps fed up with it. So, you know, it's hard to say where it goes next.
Sapna, stick with us. Meg Harwowski, I'm going to let you go. I know you got to run. CEO, founder of Obviously, which is a marketing firm that connects advertisers and social media influencers. Appreciate your perspective and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Jane.
We are discussing the rise of nano-influencers and who you can really trust online. You can join the conversation. Do you read product reviews before you buy? Who do you trust? We'll get into that more after the break. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. Our topic today is online marketing and how you can know what products or what endorsements to trust. You can join the conversation when you're shopping online. Do you swear by product reviews? Do you worry that they're mostly fake or otherwise compromised? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I've been speaking this hour with Sapna Maheshwari. She's a business and advertising reporter for The New York Times. Let me bring in now someone who knows a lot about the world of sponsored and fake online reviews. Joining me from San Francisco is Nicole Wen, tech reporter for BuzzFeed News. You can find a link to her recent story. Here's a guide to spotting fake Amazon reviews at our website, onpointradio.org. Nicole, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Hi.
So as a consumer, it's so hard to know when you can trust a review online. Is it fake? Is it real? And who's got the time to dig really deep to find out? What's the difference, to your mind, between a sponsored review and a fake review?
A sponsored review is where a company offers a free product or a deep discount in exchange for a review. And before October 2016, Amazon allowed this sort of incentivized review where reviewers could say in the review itself, this is my honest, unbiased opinion, but I received this product for free. A fake review is what happened after Amazon banned that kind of content. And that's when a company solicits genuine Amazon users and pays them in addition to refunding them for the free product in order to write what looks like a genuine review, but in actuality is a paid-for review.
I see. So the market for fraudulent reviews has changed pretty significantly from 2016. Would you say that?
Yes, yes. It's been driven underground, and now it's impossible for unsuspecting shoppers to tell whether or not a review they're reading is fraudulent or genuine.
Walk us through the genesis of a fake review. Where does it originate and with whom, based on your reporting?
So there are a few different types of review manipulation, but one is exactly how you'd imagine it. There's an economy that exists on Facebook and Reddit and these private Discord Slacks, and a company will post a picture of the product, Christmas lights, rain poncho, everything under the sun, and real Amazon customers will comment saying that they're interested, and the company will then offer a link to that Amazon product. And because these customers are genuinely buying this product with their own Amazon account, their Amazon review will appear as a verified purchase, but they're getting refunded by the company through PayPal off of Amazon. And so it's really hard for these fake reviews to be detected by Amazon and others.
So tell us what it is about Amazon's structure that incentivizes sellers, especially small and new sellers, to use some of these fake reviews.
Amazon's marketplace for third-party sellers is huge and open to just about anyone who'd like to sell their wares in Amazon's online bazaar. It's one of their biggest moneymakers in 2016. It made tens of billions of dollars for Amazon. And because it's so competitive and there's so many sellers in the marketplace, they're all competing to be in that first row of search results when you type in exercise leggings or Christmas lights. And in order to show up on that top row or that top page, that first page of search results, they need a lot of reviews on the product and a lot of good reviews. And the best way to acquire good reviews, because many customers, you know, only 3 to 10% of customers leave reviews on products that they buy, they have to pay for them.
We reached out to Amazon to join us here. They refused or declined, but they did send us a statement which reads, "We take this responsibility very seriously and defend the integrity of reviews by taking aggressive action to prevent abuse and protect customers from dishonest parties. In addition to advance prevention and detection of false reviews, we filed lawsuits against more than 1,000 defendants for review abuse and will continue to suspend, ban, and pursue legal action against the sellers and manufacturers who create the demand for inauthentic reviews." Nicole, is Amazon doing enough from a consumer's perspective to protect consumers against these fake, inauthentic reviews?
Like you just stated in their statement, I do believe that they're investing heavily in these machine learning algorithms to give weight to newer reviews that are marked as more helpful. But the truth is, it's an impossible problem. The marketplace is so big, no number of human moderators would be able to go through each and every review and determine whether or not it was fake without also being on those in those Facebook and Reddit and Discord groups. And so while they are trying to prohibit the number of prohibit fraudulent reviews on the platform, it's a difficult problem, and there are simply too many reviews to moderate.
Sapna, I mean, is it an impossible problem from your perspective? I know you've done a lot of reporting on this. Is it like whack-a-mole? I mean, how can you ever possibly control every fake review out there, Sapna?
I absolutely agree with that. I think that Nicole's reporting has been fascinating in this area, and when you realize that, I mean, these are attached to actual purchases. I mean, how do you regulate that?
Let's get Andreas in here from Baltimore, Maryland. Hi, Andreas. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead, please.
So I was speaking in terms of reviews. There's a website that I've used in terms of fitness equipment, sort of fitness watches and other stuff. It's a website called DC Rainmaker, and it seems like it's very good and doesn't seem heavily sponsored. He does very in-depth and very thorough reviews, and it seems like at the beginning of each review, he'll say, if a company sent him a piece of equipment to review, he'll state that, and he says that he sends it back, and if he does want one at the end, that he'll have to buy his own. He talks about the equipment he uses on a personal basis. And I don't think that it's heavily sponsored. I haven't done a full amount of research on it, but it seems like he says, if you do want to buy these products, you can purchase them through links at the bottom of my webpage.
Yeah. I guess generally speaking, though, Andreas, do you have a hard time discerning reviews, fake reviews from real reviews? How do you see it more broadly speaking?
Yeah, and in Amazon, especially, I'll see almost no matter what the product, you can see a bunch of 5-star reviews or a bunch of 1-star reviews. And almost, I sort of don't necessarily look at the verified purchaser thing on Amazon anymore. I will sort of look at if it sounds like it was written by a person who actually used this product.
I see.
You know.
Andreas, thank you very much for the call there from Maryland. Nicole, some merchants are actually using Facebook to flood Amazon with fake reviews. How's that working?
Facebook is the biggest marketplace for this exchange of paid reviews and free products or Amazon gift cards from sellers. And that'll work in a very similar fashion. You know, posting a photo of the product and offering a PayPal refund after the genuine Amazon customer has offered proof that they've left a positive review, and after they send a link to their review to the seller, then they'll receive that PayPal refund with an additional kickback, maybe $1 or $2 or even a $10 Amazon gift card for their time.
So what's Facebook's responsibility here, Nicole?
I'm not sure that Facebook really has one, because it's really up to Amazon to be in those groups and sort of police the activity that's in them, and maybe locate what the products that are being peddled through those groups are, and take down the illegitimate reviews on their site. But in April, after my story was published, Amazon did do a pretty thorough sweep of Facebook groups. And Facebook actually took down some of the biggest groups, but they're popping up all the time. And like you said, it's a game of whack-a-mole for them.
Ted's in Boonville, Missouri. Hi, Ted. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead, please.
I've found out that I can't just rely on one site to adequately give me a proper review. I was recently helping a friend of mine purchase a printer and went to various sites, not just Amazon, but also Walmart.com, found the printer on Newegg and Alibaba. I also don't just rely on the positive reviews. Mm-hmm. I like reading the negative reviews. Find out what people don't like about the product. Many times that's what helps me make the decision.
Ted, thank you. Nicole, would you say that's a good that's good advice there from Ted?
I think that's fantastic advice. I love websites like Consumer Reports, Wirecutter, and Good Housekeeping. These are websites that are dedicated to reviews and don't necessarily aren't the marketplace in which they're being sold. Though, you know, Wirecutter is an affiliate link site, so they do get a small kickback every time you make a purchase. But these are scientifically approached reviews, and I do tell folks to really look at whether or not reviews are published on the same day. Maybe it's the day right before a big sale like Cyber Monday, or if they're all five stars and unverified purchases, or this new type of review manipulation where the reviews are for a completely different product. It doesn't take that much time, and it can really make a difference.
What advice would you add to that, Sapna?
I think that's a great way to approach it. I think that it it has become based on affiliate links and people getting paid to promote different things. It's become harder actually to find negative reviews because there's now an incentive for people to say positive things about products. Mm. So actually seeking out that feedback can be one of the most helpful things you can do.
Mm. From our website, one listener writes, "The internet needs a universal accountability system for any review or blog. One should be able to see whether the entry is traceable to a real person or whether it is untraceable. Maybe there is a social media solution, some means of detecting using automatic classifiers whether a post is likely to be a paid nano influencer or something else." What do you say about that, Nicole? I mean, what other advice would you give, especially if you're a small business owner, you know, who's struggling with some of these fake reviews?
I think that the reason why the problem of fake reviews is so widespread on Amazon is because of the anonymity that having an Amazon account provides. You don't need to provide your real name. You don't need to attach a photo. And often people don't. And that allows the review manipulation to persist. But on other sites like Yelp and TripAdvisor, where there's definitely review manipulation, there's less because many of those are tied to people's real Facebook accounts and Google accounts and that sort of thing. So I think that could definitely help Amazon, but I don't imagine them outsourcing their review platform to Facebook anytime soon.
Sapna, in your reporting on influencer marketing, which we spent the first part of this hour talking about, have you spoken with people about the murky world of online reviews? And is this part of the allure of influencer marketing?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, broadly, it's getting harder and harder to figure out what you can trust online. And advertisers, of course, at the same time, I mean, they're going to go wherever people are, and they're going to try and find advantages where they can. So online reviews, I think it's really challenging to find authentic ones on various sites because of everything Nicole was saying, anonymity and companies being incentivized to create their own. Influencer marketing provides so much appeal for brands because, like we talked about, you're reaching people who are followed by their friends and family and have this built-in trust. Mm-hmm. You trust when your friend tells you, hey, I found this thing and I really liked it. And that's exactly what advertisers are trying to harness here.
Let's go to Steve in New Haven, Connecticut. Hi, Steve. I'm glad you waited. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. Thanks for having me on. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make a point of one time I didn't even do this over Amazon, but I happened to leave a scathing review on Amazon of a product that I bought. But I, you know, because I was very unhappy with it, and I happened to, if you're going to leave a scathing review, you know, like you're really dissatisfied, do yourself a favor and send one to the manufacturer of that product, because that's what I did, and they not only replaced my product with the identical one, they sent me another model too on top of it. It was like an updated model.
Okay.
So I wound up with like a two for one.
You got a good response on that one, Steve. Thank you. Thanks very much for the call from New Haven. Nicole, we just got a couple of minutes left here. I'm curious if Amazon went back to allowing sponsored content, would that be a step in the right direction with all of this?
It's really hard to say. The reason why they banned incentivized reviews in the first place is because a report by ReviewMeta, a site that analyzes Amazon listings, found that incentivized reviews were not unbiased at all. And in fact, they were much more positive than non-incentivized reviews. I don't think that's necessarily a step in the right direction, but I think that if Amazon did crack down on the sort of this more obvious review manipulation, like, for example, when customers update their negative reviews after receiving a free product, or where reviews don't even aren't related to the product that's being sold on that listing whatsoever, then I think that could help the issue.
Chris in Atlanta, Georgia, I want to get you in here. Just have a couple seconds left. What's your question, Chris?
Yes, I want to find out what the validity or what the validity they see in video reviews taking hold in the future. Do you think there'll be more weight to those than just purely a post?
Good question, Chris. Thanks. Nicole?
I think video reviews are a great solution to this issue of shopping online and not being able to touch, try, and see the product that you're actually buying. And if you watch a video review on mute and just watch how someone's handling a product, I think that's a really good way to decide whether or not you need that product for yourself.
So, Sapna, leave us with your final thoughts here. What have you learned in all this reporting?
I think that advertising is everywhere and it's inescapable. And it's fascinating to see these economies build on these platforms that we use every single day.
Sapna Maheshwari is a reporter for the New York Times Business and Advertising Reporter. You can link to her story, Are You Ready for the Nano Influencers, at our website, onpointradio.org. Sapna, thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
And Nicole Nguyen is a tech reporter for BuzzFeed News. Really appreciate your time today. Nicole, you can find a link to her story, Here's a Guide to Spotting Fake Amazon Reviews. That's also at our website, onpointradio.org. Nicole, thanks to you. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
And listeners, thank you. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.